Let's go.
You done?
Let's go.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to That Guy's a Maniac, the podcast, DS. We are a podcast about video games. My name is Richie. With me, as always, is Farley, a.k.a. Kunzy11. He will say hi, and he will tell you where to find us on the internet and explain why we're called DS this season.
Hi, guys. Kunzy11 here. You are That Guy's a Maniac, DS, the podcast, your one-stop shop for news, reviews, video game previews. You can find our Ask That Guy's a Maniac video game based content at www.thatguys.co.uk or across all the socials at That Guy's a Maniac, all one word, all lowercase. Richie, how is that punctuated again?
It is all one word, all lowercase.
Correct. This season we're taking our inspiration from Nintendo DS. In particular, they had a little gimmick where many of the games for the system had a subtitle that began with a D and an S, such as Full Metal Alchemist Dual Sympathy. At the beginning of this season, we wrote 124 D words and 127 S words, put them in two bags, didn't mix them up, so it's one bag of D's, one bag of S's, and then we pick a random D and we pick a random S, and we do the podcast on those topics. So, Richie, I believe you have a big bag of these.
Right, and I'm just rumbling and rummaging and crinkling a piece of paper. Oh my God, I've got one. Oh, it's quite an interesting D.
Yeah?
Yeah, it is is DJ.
Interesting. Is that our first one that's only letters?
Our first acronym.
I've got a bag of S's. Let's see if we can get some magic coincidence companion S. Oh, having a good old rummage. I've got one. Come on. It is Slay. So what do we got?
Well, I mean, I don't know if you're thinking the same as me, but the only thing I can think of if you name DJ Slay is doing a music episode like we did in season three.
We're doing a music episode like we did in season three.
Well, we did two episodes.
We did two episodes. Please give Music Banter Part 1 and Music. We didn't call it Music Banter Part 2. We called it Something Else Part 2. from last season, for a general introduction to the music episode and about 45 minutes talking about video game music.
Link in the description.
Link in the description.
maybe.
If we remember.
Yeah.
Otherwise, search for it on the search box and the favourite podcast thing and it might come up. So last time, the format of the episode was we picked some tracks, not necessarily our favourite tracks, some tracks to bring together talking about all the wonderful ways in which video games and music interact. It's transformative, it's transportative, it can be remixed, it can take you back to a certain time, it can call back a previous game or a previous section, bosses can have themes, it can get your pulse running, it can make you stop and look at the virtual trees. And we've got some more top music picks in this episode.
Wow, yeah, and pretty much if you listen to our previous episode, we waffle on for about 2 hours saying exactly what Farley just summed up in roughly 3 minutes there.
Yeah. Go and give that a listen if you want the longer version. So we've picked a couple of tracks each. The pressure was slightly off because this is the second round, so... I'd got some big ones that I felt compelled to get out of the way first. Shall I go first?
Yeah, no, I'll be going first.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
And yeah, so I am going to throw in a little shorter one. It's a tune that both myself and Farley enjoy. And it's from a game that we both enjoy. Right, so let's give it a listen.
Okay, we're going in deaf.
You're going in deaf. I'll explain afterwards.
Great.
Patently stupid. That's what they say. If you've got an idea, hey, just tell us today. People have problems, but what can you do? Invent a solution, and that's money for you. Put on your thinking cap, grab a pen, and make a design. With confidence, style, and flair. Get investors to give you some cash. Soon you'll be a millionaire. Toby and Lena, they used to be wed. They still work together, but they don't share a bed. They've got no warning from the FTC. Nothing illegal about making money.
Yeah, so there you go. Patently Stupid from Jackbox Party Pack 5. Is it a favourite of yours, Farley?
I do. It's really interesting to hear it clean, because normally you only hear that in the background of the menu screen and Marshall. so yeah, to hear it isolated.
Yeah, it's quite cool. Yeah, no, we're also usually screaming and shouting and pointing at our own drawings that are coming up during the credits as well, and things like that. So I love the fact that there's like a narrative behind the two presenters, that they're living together and not sharing a bed. It's like there's a lot of detail in there. Incidentally, that is just the theme to Patently Stupid. It's by Andy Poland, featuring Mike Finney.
Okay. It harkens back to the songs, which you used to get, you know, like jingle songs on adverts that we probably only experienced as being parodied.
you still get them on crappy local radio stations. So get them, man. It's insane. I was in Glasgow. I was in a black cab, and like these jingles came on. I just, this is so stupid. They don't even realize that they're just parodying themselves.
Yeah,
you know, it's crazy. It's like, for all your tiling needs, Andy's Tales. You know, just, oh my god.
Yeah.
And
they are actually the instructions to the game as well, which I find is fun.
Yeah, it's really excellent that they explain the whole system of the game, where you actually just, you know, you're spending your time trying to make the most ridiculous items, pass them to your teammates and get them to talk at length about some awful, awful contraption, usually involving genitalia that you have created. Yeah.
Or bums.
Yeah, yeah. Famously, we have the, was it the bum funnel?
The bum tunnel funnel?
Bum tunnel funnel, yeah.
Which remains a top seller.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I like it. I like that song. And then I think all of those little touches across Jackbox games, they have like these game show commentators as well. And I really think with the music, the commentary, the little bits which are kind of hidden in snippets between menu screens is what really makes Jackbox. It's the difference between, you know, just being a selection of party games and it being more entertaining, well-rounded package.
Yeah, I mean, they're super polished. I don't know if it loses something because it's super polished, but I think it's just fine. They work. We haven't had too many things messing up.
No.
No, never.
No, very well, you know, yeah, very, very rarely. Occasionally get booted out on mobile phones, whatever. But the games generally do work. Yeah, and the music bits are nice.
But yeah, one of the things, and one of the reasons I mainly chose this piece of music is we will still be singing that song, usually yeah. The day after playing
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Just, you know, just wondering. Making a fry up the next morning. Apparently stupid. Yeah. So it's just it gets stuck in my head more than any other of the nicely polished songs or nice flavor that they've added, and it just stays in there, yeah. Man. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good earworm. And it harkens, thinking about it a little bit more, it harkens back to... Because the whole thing is most of the games are presented like a game show that you're taking part in. Because game shows also used to have their own theme tunes, right? That they would close out on. Sometimes the presenter would...
Oh, yeah, yeah, sing it. Like I can see like Les Dennis finishing off a song and a TV show and singing.
Yeah.
Or indeed, like variety shows. Remember when you used to get that?
Yeah.
So variety shows, someone would just end singing their song.
Yeah.
Like the Russ Abbott TV show. I think it was like 45 minutes of sketches, and it would just end in a song.
Yeah.
Mental.
Yeah. Mental. So all part of that. Part of the trappings and dressings of Jackbox.
Yep. I don't know if we've got much more to talk about when it comes to this.
No.
It's a song, it's in Jackbox.
It's a good song. It's a good place.
Yeah. Okay, so I think we should ditch Patently Stupid and move on to something with more substance. And so all eyes on you, Farley. Bring us the substance.
Nice segue. Well, I'm briefly touched on this in the previous episode as an example of what music could be. I think in video games, I think it's probably the best example I can think of about how in this particular game, music is intrinsically tells part of the story and is really intimately interweaved through the production of this whole game and its story. So I'm be talking about Splatoon and Splatoon 2, and it's a couple of tracks so as you may be aware, Splatoon is based on this society of hyper-hedonistic inklings, which are into their fashion and obsessed with playing this multiplayer paint sloshing game against each other. Despite that being the premium, you could just easily be like a lobby shooter. There's all these layers to the kind of history and the story. So there's history to be found in the files and some of the level designs that basically suggest that society collapses, and then from squid and octopus and a few surviving artifacts and a cryogenically frozen cat, this new world kind of comes out of it. And what I really like about this, I like and hate in equal measure, I think, is the story between Splatoon and Splatoon 2 is told across a number of different media.
Oh, God, yeah.
So you may remember that the Splatoon has these events called Splatfests.
Yeah.
Where you pick a team, so it will be mayo versus ketchup. There's been so many of them. Do you leave the toilet paper folded at the back of the roll, the front of the roll? Do you like friends or family, all of this business. You pick a team at the beginning of the Smackfest, and then whoever cumulatively kind of wins over the season, or the weekend or whatever it is the winner, and you get a few more items than the losing team. So these things are called Splatfest. And each game so far has had like a big Splatfest at the end of the game, which we've then seen has a steer on the next entry. So the final Splatfest in Splatoon was choosing between Callie and Marie, who were the kind of in-game idol squid sisters. They're called idols. So they would come out and sing a song during the Splatfest. Just part of this kind of Japan-inspired hedonistic thing. So the... who, I can't remember who won that. Team Marie won Splatfest. She's the kind of slightly quieter, reserved one. And then that had an impact because when you begin Splatoon 2, Callie is missing. And then as you progress the story, each of these two idols, Callie and Marie, when you put their names together, it's Calamari.
Oh, God, yes.
This is back in, when was it, 2016, maybe? They had signature songs. Each of them had like a ballad that they sing on their own rather than together. And these were released as videos outside of the game. I think they were performed by them virtually. So they did a bunch of virtual concerts.
Oh, God. Okay.
And then you could, if you purchased the Callie and Marie amiibos, you could use the amiibos in-game to watch them essentially perform their song. So already you've got one game going into a second game. Competition decided by online players. This kind of toys to life aspect of playing these songs. And so we listen to just a snippet of each of their individual songs because they're very kind of different. So the first one we listen to is Marie, who sings Tide Goes Out. So it's a very kind of slow and somber, like romantic ballad. So get that in your ear holes now. Okay, so that's Marie's kind of very slow melodic, and she, if you can imagine, she's doing like a very kind of slow dance to it.
I imagine it's kind of like a Hawaiian sort of hula dance.
Yeah, almost. Yeah, when I picture it, she's like on a jetty, you know, like a jetty with a sunset in the background.
Okay.
Singing this. Then we've got Callie's kind of signature song, which is Bomb Rush Blush, which is a little bit more high tempo. And Poppy, let's give that a listen too.
We'll be right back.
Yeah, so that's a Cali song, Bomb Rush Blush, and it's I prefer that. It's a bit kind of poppier, high tempo.
I think they both have their merits. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I think that was the point, because their character design is a bit different. So Cali is the kind of more outgoing one, and Marie's the kind of quiet, shy, tropey type one.
Okay.
Yeah. The lyrics are mostly nonsense. It's like a
Is it their own squiddling language?
Yeah, it's their own language, but confusingly, in some media which they've appeared in, there is like Japanese phonetics for some of it. So some people
okay.
try to interpret whatever. So they each have these, you know, these popular idols. They're kind of the most popular people in the setting of Splatoon. The end Splatfest of Splatoon is they pit them against each other, which is really, you know, kind of cruel. People were like, which one do I pick? Marie wins that one and Cali loses. And then when Splatoon 2 comes out, Cali is missing. Spoilers for Splatoon 2, if you care. When you go through the whole storyline, it turns out that she's kind of has been kidnapped by the antagonist of the series, which is this DJ called DJ Octavio, I can't remember now, who is this DJing octopus with a crown, it's a really old school boss fight, but amazing boss fight. He's essentially in this flying DJ booth at the end of the first one.
Okay.
And so at the end of the second one, you play through the whole story, and then you get to this final stage, and you see Cali, like on her stage. She turns around, she's kind of all dark, she's wearing these shades, she's got like an octopus tattoo on her midriff. And then lo and behold, DJ Octavio emerges, and he's underneath, and so then you fight him DJing with Cali on top, and it transpires, he says that he's kind of remixed her brain with the hypno shades that she puts on.
Okay.
And he's remixed her brain, and he's remixed her song. So a lot of it's already kind of like music themed and oriented. When you first start that boss fight, it's a remix of Bomb Rush Blush with DJ Octavio's DJ deep bass wub 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 underneath Bomb Rush Blush. He's flying around, you beat, you know, three phases, and then Cali turns up in her own flying stage tries to snap, Marie tries to snap Cali out of it by she shoots the shades off, and then she sings her song against her song. And so what we'll be listening to now, which is the track which I've chosen, which required all of that lengthy explanation, but hopefully it'll be worth it, is the version of the song which plays in the last bit of that boss battle, which fans call Tidal Rush, because it's Tide Goes Out and Bomb Rush Blush.
Brilliant, brilliant.
it has different names in other languages, and some people, I think for a while there was a debate as to whether that was just the fan name or the official name. But the genius thing about it, hopefully which you'll pick up, is it's not just Marie and Cali singing against each other. You've also got DJ Octavio in there, and so they sing underneath each other, through each other, together at the same time, whilst they're both floating around, whilst you're trying to shoot ink at this floating DJ stage, which is throwing fists and missiles at you. And it just works really, really well, you know, because these two songs, which were separate, are interweaved, and it brings those three kind of characters together. So let's give it a listen.
Yeah.
Hopefully you could hear that through the two thongs, and then you've also got DJ Octavia stuff going through.
It sounds an awful lot like a Japanese game boss fight. An awful lot. It's like there's that middle bit where it's sort of like bomb, 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 with the sort of the choral sort of chords playing. Yeah, it's very, very much a boss fight music.
It is a boss fight music, and this is playing. I mean, it took me a while to kind of pick it up. I mean, they're quite explicit about it. You have cutscenes in the game about it, because you are in the middle of this boss fight. He's flying around. You've got Callie on top with these shades on, and you've got Marie flying around. You're dodging missiles. You're dodging bullets. You're on at some point, you're on like a high wire ink thing spiraling around the boss. But I really like, and I don't know if you picked up, if you listen to this in stereo, where you've got a stereo version of the MP3. But they're both on different sides of the different speakers as they sing and get stronger in and against each other. All of which is very, very cool, and I like the fact that it's a song and they're singers and he's a DJ, and it's kind of weaved through the whole thing, and it's tied through to live concerts and video launches. And
was there an awful lot of exposure to Bomb Rush and Tidal Rush? Tide goes out as the separate characters?
No, not really. No, I mean, in Japan there was much more of a numerous kind of holographic concerts with them both.
Yeah.
So I think they were much better known there. And then it was outside of Japan, or certainly my experience was hopping online, being like, oh, did anyone else notice that this theme is here and this theme is here, and kind of picking it out there. And so they're kind of both of those songs, and the final boss fight. There's loads of remixes and music videos out there for them. So I think for people who found them, it really picked up on them. But so I think it's a cool thing to do. I really like the way it crosses media, but also it's just way too much effort for what is the single player part of online ink ground covering shooter. And particularly when infamously they had the concept for this game, but it was really late in the day, according to developers, that the kind of squid octopus ink theming came to it, whereas if we didn't know that, or just looking at the game and the series, it seems like such an obvious all of those design elements work really well together, the ink and the paint, and then the fashion, and then the music, and then the story plays out through the music in and against each other. I don't know what, you know, was there foresight in, you know, how can we weave these songs together and bring back DJ Octavio? And I just absolutely love it all. Of course, I was there, you know, I lived through it as it was all kind of coming out and putting together, which is something you can't really easily reconstruct. I mean, can find the stuff out there, but now it's all over the Splatoon Wikipedia or whatever, but you know, I was there when those songs were released, and very much the same thing happened from 2 to 3, and elements of these songs and these themes crop up here and there in other parts of the story or callbacks. The final bit of that boss fight is Marie manages to shoot the sunglasses off, and then she starts singing their duet song from the end of the first game, the Calamari incantation, and manages to persuade Callie to snap out of it and join her.
And remix the bridge. She downloaded the original.
Yeah, she downloaded the original. And then DJ Octavia is kind of overwhelmed by you essentially shooting me in the face a lot of times, but also the Squid Sisters groove. A really nice little detail is if you replay the boss fight, I think Marie has a line of dialogue saying, "What the hell?" And Callie kind of saying, "I thought these sunglasses were cool."
Brilliant.
Puts them back on so you can do that. They can do that end sequence all over again. So there's my pick, and I really like. I don't know, just the forethought or the planning or the multi-level.
Listen, sound engineers in games, we don't give them enough credit, and especially like going back to what. Like we were talking about in the previous episode, I am terrible. Like, I will straight up turn stuff off.
All of this off.
Yeah. Like, yeah. You know, like, there's so many great things that have been done. And I'm sure what you're talking about there, like the amalgamation of two songs coming together to bring out a boss fight, or indeed just a theme through a game. That's the sort of shit you get in like operas, you know, where somebody's got a theme and then you get to the end ballad and it's like, oh, right, okay, that's blah blah blah's theme. All right, he's the bad guy, he's now on stage.
Or he's about to come on because.
But I guarantee there's probably a million games out there that we've played through and we've just not picked up on those audio cues. It's for the audio files. I don't know if we are the right, or maybe I am definitely not the right the right audience for that sort of stuff. It's just like, oh, this music's annoying, can I just turn it off and put on Bloodhound Gang or something like that, you know, like just like I do love games that allow you to play your own music in the background and stuff like that, and Windows Game Bar is really, really good at that as well now. But the engineering and sound that these guys do is immense, and it's amazing how much it can affect a game as well. But not only that, like, you were part of a bubble. Like you were saying, you lived through it. You were part of a bubble that just won't happen again in that same way. And that's quite cool for just be like, oh, wow, this is occurring now. This is a crazy remix that's been done by this. Virtual concerts and shit like that happening of these characters. I can see the pull and draw. But at the same time, it's a labour of love that is probably only going to hit maybe a small percentage of the fan base.
Yeah, I think so. Even to kind of, you know, listen to the songs, work out that, oh, those are their songs that are being pulled together, that these little motives occur here and there. There's a really nice remix of Bomb Rush Blush in Smash Ultimate.
Yeah, of course it is.
For the background level there. Yeah, and then subsequent games introduced another supergroup and various other bits of music, and their music and their song kind of plays through the whole thing. It was just this really pleasing collision of all of those elements, and the fact that he's DJ, you know, he's like, his weapons are this flying DJ booth. A lot of the weapons are kind of like audio or music themed, so it's just all comes together in this. I don't know. It's kind of like, you, there needs to be a word like synesthesia, but like omni something, where every aspect in that boss fight, every aspect of that game is the boss fight. It's not just the visuals. It's not just the mechanics. It's also the music. It's also the story. It's also shit that happened in real world. It's also the, you know, online players that ended up choosing one character over another, and heartening back to older games.
It is Legion. It's more than the sum of his parts.
Yeah. Really, really, really. And just this, this brilliant moment. Like I say, almost tucked away at the back of a single player story mode of a shooter. Because you expect that kind of stuff with MMOs, right? They have stuff that happens outside of game which influences game, or stuff that happens in game.
Things like Fortnite or something like that.
Which is now becoming, you know, a bit more commonplace. It was great to be part of that wave. And, you know, I think the tidal rush is better than the three individual elements together. even though, if you were just listening to that song in isolation, it's quite a strange thing to listen to.
Yes.
It's a gibberish language, kind of quite slow theme.
I didn't want to be a Debbie Downer. It was it was a hard lesson.
It's definitely boosted by knowing where those songs come from.
Yeah, and having that
immersed yourself
behind it.
in the game. Yeah. I think just pulling it in isolation, but hopefully I've introduced it to some people who may not have heard of it before.
Anyway, on the note of recurring themes and other such things, I have a little piece of music for you now.
Please do play it.
Break time.
Debbie, 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 do. There we go, there we go. Right, okay, so we have reached the middle of the podcast and we are going... We are going to change the pace. We're not talking about music right now. We are going to ask each other questions and...
From the ultimate...
Ultimate? Question mark? Video game trivia. Yeah, we'll take a nice little palate cleanser and then we'll dip back into some music in the second half. So, Farley.
Yeah.
Hit me with your first question. Or do we need to explain anything more?
No, that's it.
Yeah, okay. Hit me with your first question.
It's the middle of the podcast, break time. This is weird because I think we've mentioned it on the last four episodes and it probably wasn't coming up. So this is the way of it getting into the podcast. A lawsuit was filed by Sega against the 2003 game, The Simpsons Road Rage, for its perceived similarities to which other driving game?
Crazy Taxi.
Weird. Don't talk about it for three seasons and then talk about three episodes in a row.
Okay, right. Well, that was an easy, quick one.
Yeah.
Right. How is your Tekken knowledge?
Worse than Mortal Kombat, to be honest.
Okay, okay. Panda first appears as a selectable fighter in which game of the Tekken franchise?
Now, is Panda like an alt costume of a bear or is it the other way around?
That's the crux of why I said selectable.
Selectable. So I think Tekken was vanilla. Tekken 2 started to go a bit wacky and maybe it was available as like a shadow pick of a bear. So I'm going to say Tekken 3.
It is Tekken 3 and exactly that reason. Brilliant. Good stuff.
Wasn't Roger also the kangaroo also?
Roger and Alex were the same thing.
That series weird.
Yeah, it really is.
I tend to think of it as being quite straight laced, but having just talked about Panda and two kangaroos, I think.
No, Alex is a raptor.
Alex the raptor.
Or
Roger's the kangaroo.
A lizard, yeah. But they look identical, it's just a skin. And then you have, like, in Tekken 2, which is the one I probably spend the most time playing.
Yeah, me too.
You had Jin Kazuma, who had almost identical moveset to Heihachi, who was identical to Devil, who was identical to Angel. There was just like, there were so many people had the same movesets.
Yeah.
I did like that they did that whole thing where you had a roster which had mostly unique moves, and then they had a second roster that you had to unlock in Tekken 2, which were basically sort of alt versions of the characters that you played through as. So in Jack 2, you got Prototype Jack, and you could unlock Prototype Jack, who was slightly different moves. Anna, you could get her sister. Oh gosh, Nina.
Yeah.
Or Nina, you could get Anna, sorry.
Yes.
Just other stuff like that. Like Yoshimitsu, you got Kunimitsu. That was quite cool. I would enjoy playing through Tekken 2 to do that again. Maybe. I doubt it. Maybe.
Yeah, until you load it up and it looks like Lego brick cats.
Yeah. you remember it so much better.
Yeah, you really do.
There's Tekken 8 coming out any day now as well.
Yeah, there is. There is. Okay, second question.
Hit me.
Did not know the answer to this. Released in 2001, the large original Xbox controller went by what nickname?
Oh gosh, I did not know it had. I always just called it the Fisher Price controller.
My first controller.
Yeah. Apparently
it had a nickname.
I'm gonna call it the DX Wing.
No, oh, it's cringier than that.
Oh, it's cringier than that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Tell me.
The Duke.
Duke.
Yeah.
J or D?
D.
Duke. Okay. Okay.
No further context.
Yeah, no, no.
As to who called it that.
Makes me a little sad. Unfortunately, I think this is another crap question for you.
Shit, okay.
How is your Apex Legends knowledge? Okay. In Apex Legends,
yeah.
Which character... Can you name a character?
No.
...is described as a technological tracker?
Okay, technological tracker. It's got to be some...
So...
...stupid name like...
Hang on. Yeah. I mentioned I like a certain band to play.
Play
over, like, instead of game music. Yeah. What was the name of that band?
Bloodhound!
Bloodhound! Well done! Nailed it! In one!
Yeah, I knew that. I love Apex. Was it Apex?
Apex Legends.
Love Apex Legends.
Technological tracker. Bloodhound. It does work. You might have got there.
I would have gone for something like synthesizer or keyboard or something like that. You know, specs. Geek.
Okay, cool. And that's the end of break time.
Let's head back to the music.
Back to life, back to reality.
Indeed. Now, I've got a little ditty I'd like everyone to hear. I'll be honest, I haven't listened to this for a while. Not as great as I remember. But it's this track which really stuck in my mind. And is the kind of credit theme, or the ending theme for Streets of Rage 2, which I mentioned previously. So me and my brother and my friend threw ourselves at Streets of Rage, you know, Streets of Rage 2, where you kind of learn the move patterns and then get further and then die and then use your continues and then you get further and then you reset and then you get further. And so eventually, at some point, we managed to beat the game, and I think if you have played Streets of Rage 2 and you picture it, you can hear the kind of arcadey noise music which is in the background of that game. Sometimes it's a little bit more industrial, sometimes it's a little bit more disco depending on the level, but essentially it's this certain kind of music. And then over the ending, when you rescue... Oh, you rescue the guy from the first game, don't you?
Yeah,
Max? Max is in it.
Oh gosh, like so, Hagar's was, oh no, that's Final Fight, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh crap, Axel and, oh gosh.
You got Axel.
Adam? Is it Adam?
But Adam, maybe.
Anyway, yeah.
There's even enough of a plot. The quartet. You've got Axel, Adam, and Blaze.
Yeah.
Are in the first one. And then you've got Axel, Blaze, Skate, and... What's the name of the big guy? Who knows? Anyway, you finish, you rescue one of those, whoever that is. We can't remember. And this theme plays over it.
Thank you.
We just keep waiting for E17 to jump in.
it is very, very, it's relentlessly chirpy as well. We can't have E17. They were a bit somber. You need someone really, really sort of it's like Aqua. I think Aqua could do a cover of that.
Well, you're like one of the slightly slower ballady ones.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, when you said Streets of Rage 2, yeah. I was genuinely expecting a sort of, you know, Genesis or Mega Drive version of the of a guitar, sort of bam bam da 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 da, then sort of like this theme going over. Not this incredibly chirpy. That could have been the theme tune to some 3D, not 3D, but 2D platformer. Easily. I did not expect it to be Streets of Rage.
Like Fleckin' Candyland or something like that. You know?
Yeah. Some shit like that. Exactly.
And you have to imagine, whilst this music's playing, you've got little pixelated vignettes and little text kind of fading up in the way that they would fade in and out in those Genesis games. So bearing in mind that you only hear that at the end of the game, and at the time, in whenever it came out, 1992, 1993, that was the only way you could hear it.
Yeah.
On that first listen, when we first beat it, it was just, you know, there was something about it. It was hooked.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, that is a very congratulatory, positive piece of music. Yeah. And how many Streets of Rage 2 cartridge owners do you reckon actually heard that music?
I don't know. I mean, if Streets of Rage 2 has been re-released, which I'm sure it has been.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm sure you should jump to the PlayStation trophies or like the Steam achievements and see like 0.06% of people.
Yeah, that sort of stuff. Yeah.
For beating Streets of Rage 2. Let alone if I ever wanted to hear it again, having to clear the entire game, because this was, you know, 92. There isn't really much of an internet out at that time. Definitely not that you could look up, you know, video and audio rips of video games. So yeah, just something about that song hooked me the first time I heard it. I think it's had the effect on a couple of other people, because you do very rarely find it remixed. And just this nice kind of soft congratulatory theme. The trouble's all done. No more eating entire chickens off the floor or fighting
floor, you know, chicken.
Yeah, fighting like, you know, punks and hookers with electric whips and fat greasy wrestlers. No, it's all blue skies and sunsets here on in with that ending theme.
Happy days, yeah.
Yeah, happy days. Unfortunately, I couldn't find out who specifically composed that piece. There's two listed composers, Yuzo Koshiro and somebody else. I couldn't imagine other people do know, but I couldn't work out who was responsible for such a charming little ditty tucked away at the end of a side-scrolling bitmap.
Yeah, I mean that's an epic find. Yeah,
and it was really, really was an earworm. You know, I was thinking about it long after I'd heard it, just that one time.
Cool,
magic. Richie, what do you got for us next?
Right, so just a little sort of behind the scenes TGAM. I struggled a little bit to find tracks that I wanted to bring to this episode. Like, I brought some really good ones, or at least I felt I brought some really good ones to the previous episodes.
Oh yeah, Soul Edge.
Soul Edge. Shadow. Edge Shadow the Beast. Well, yeah. Constant favourite of mine. And He's and Co's theme.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, I was just talking about Project Cross Zone. But yeah. And I was just sort of racking my brain trying to think, what games have I been affected by the music? And actually, there was one quite recently, and I was going to save this one for one of our What Are You Playing episodes, but I'll just sort of talk about it now. It was a game that came out around November last year, just before Christmas. It's a game called Slay the Princess.
Oh, yeah.
Did you hear about this one at all?
I heard about it, but I couldn't tell you even... It sounds like a roguelike just in the title.
Right. You're not wrong. It's a roguelike meets a visual novel.
Okay.
Because you don't get enough of them.
No.
So, like, the opening premise of the game is you have been told you have to slay the princess. You're not sure why, and you get some narrative choices, but the narrator just kind of gets you back on track. So, no, just head back to the cabin. She's in the basement. You have to kill her. The whole world will be safe if you do this. Okay. But as you're proceeding, you're listening to this music. Okay, yeah, so it's a relatively ominous ditty. It's there, it's got a nice theme tune. This is actually called The Princess. It's by Brandon Boone.
It's very Twin Peaks.
Yeah. It's definitely got an underlying sinister feel to it, which is actually the entire game, because when you first sort of go in to the basement, you see the princess and you have the option to talk to her, and you can do nothing. You can spend a lot of time, you can try what you can to save her, and it gets pretty dark, and then when you think it can get dark, it gets darker. So the roguelite element is you might kill the princess, you might have tried to save her, but he's going to reset, and then you'll go back in. The narrator seems to know, or doesn't know, but realizes that you might be stuck in a time loop as well with it.
Okay.
But each time you visit the princess,
yeah,
things change. A mirror will appear, or her dialogue changes ever so slightly. And just when things start to look a bit icky, like there is some pretty weird stuff.
Yeah.
Like she's stuck in a chain. And so she asks for the knife that you're holding and basically just cuts her own arm off to get herself out of the chain without flinching or anything like that. But the narrator has to step in and locks you in the room. And so the narrator's talking to you and stopping this happening at the same time. It's all just a visual novel, but at the same time, very, very icky. And then things change. And the tone changes. And you hear this theme tune. So yeah, as you can tell, the music changes ever so slightly and it goes into a darker theme. And it really, really sets the tone quite well because there's themes of love and there's themes of desire and why do you even want to save or slay the princess? You're not sure. And each time you have to continue through this story, different things happen. You sort of get past the initial phase where things aren't right.
Yeah.
And then you get into a sort of loop where, depending on how you react to the princess, she'll change in a different way. So she'll become... she becomes knives at one point. It's a very, very creepy one. Or she'll become animalistic and she'll start hunting you instead of you hunting her. And you can, in these scenarios, die to the princess or kill the princess.
Yeah.
So it kind of becomes like based on those sort of elements. Excellent little horror game.
Yeah.
Excellent. I mean, I think it was a lunch break game for me. So I was on my lunch break. I was like, right, okay, I'm going to dive into this. It maybe took me a week, you know, 5 hours max to get through most of the game. And by get through it, I mean get to credits. So I did not go back, do every single option, die and get killed or all that sort of stuff. But I thought it was just really, really, really well done for an indie game, which is got this lovely sort of drawn aesthetic, black and white and red every so often. And yeah, the narration was like, these are well, probably not the right thing to say, but it was an amateur small production. But it's done so well. The music tonally just really, really resonated, which is why I chose it for this episode. And yeah, it was just nice and short, to the point where on Steam I thought, you know what, you guys can have more of my money, so I bought the soundtrack, which is why it's actually on here. I might return to it like Halloween next year, but kind of keeping an eye on those guys. I forget who they are. But the actual video
Black
game,
Tabby Games.
Black Tabby Games, yes. It's just worth spending a few hours running through that and seeing how it changes. I mean, yeah, I don't really want to say much more because it feels a little spoilery already.
Some of
the stuff I've seen, but
it's,
yeah,
it's one to add to the pantheon of those kind of shorter creepy pasta games which stick with you way longer than some of these, you know, open world sandbox games do, precisely because they are so short and sharp and play with the whole format of games. So I'm thinking like Doki Doki Literature Club. I don't know if you played Inscription.
I have not, no.
Okay, that got recommended to me. You should try that because that does a similar, you know, you're principally there to play one kind of game, and then it becomes apparent that it's different, and then you get several layers of, you know, like stomach dropping, like oh, to the point where you can kind of wind yourself up with how creepy it is. And music and sound effects is so much a part of that. So like with the two tracks we just heard from this one, a bit of distortion. I imagine there are bits where the music just stops as well sometimes.
Oh yes, you just hear heartbeats in the background.
Already getting goosebumps just thinking about that kind of thing.
So Inscription, that's a card battler game.
It
sells itself as that.
Without spoiling it, yes
okay.
that's how it starts, let's just say that.
Okay, cool. I'm all over it.
add it to your list, and I think you play it in the same way you play Slay the Princess, just like a bit here and a bit there, and you want to go back to play it to see what happens next.
That was the thing, is like that was my lunchtime. It was like, oh wow, okay, great. And then go back and devour some more of it. It's exactly what you think it is, and it's well worth the money I paid for it. And it came out on Halloween, but it was my sort of lead up to Christmas. Weirdly, a little bit of horror in there, but yeah. So it's
Slay the Princess out on Steam. And God,
That's it.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't imagine, because it's just a standard visual novel. Well, it's not even standard at all. Nothing. It's a visual novel. That's as much. But yeah, it was a great playthrough. There's not much more I want to say or can say about it. In fact, I'm going to shut up.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, that was another oral voyage, oral with an AU, through some choice treats from across the world of video games, brought to you by the team that guy is a maniac.
That guy slayed a princess.